Welcome to Caravan, the Art of Wayfaring podcast that tells the stories of people and places in Turkey.
Sultanahmet Square is the heart of Old City Istanbul. It's home to the Hagia Sophia and the Blue Mosque, as well as a handful of amazing museums and some spectacular outdoor artifacts. If we visited that area together, your eye would be drawn to a dozen antiquities that are still standing today. But this story doesn't belong to any of them. When looking at the grandeur of Hagia Sophia, most people would be shocked to hear that the largest and most popular building in that ancient neighborhood wasn't the church, but the hippodrome. The modern walking streets were actually the ancient stage for breathtaking horse races and revolutions and executions and political intrigue and even assassinations. What is today merely an open square was once the great hippodrome of Constantinople. When Constantine the Great unified the Roman Empire in the 4th century, he decided that he needed an eastern capital that would reflect both the glory and the authority of Rome into the eastern provinces. He selected a city at that time that was known as Byzantium and renamed it Nova Roma, but the people would simply call it Constantine City or Constantinople. If he was going to create a new Rome, grand imperial buildings were required to turn the small but promising port city into the metropolis Constantine imagined. He commissioned many structures to be built and considered one of the most important of them to be the hippodrome. In Greek, the word hippos means horse, and the word dromos means path or way. When Emperor Constantine arrived in the city, he found a respectable hippodrome already standing, but he decided to expand it and renovate it. In the end, the hippodrome would be 450 meters long and 130 meters wide. Its focal point was a U-shaped track, which would be used almost exclusively for horse racing. On the east end of the stands, there was something like an owner's box where the imperial family could watch the races. This box was joined directly to the palace by a secret tunnel, allowing royalty to come and to go without going onto the street. If the dimensions of the building failed to impress you, consider this. With a crowd packed in and every seat full, it is believed that 100,000 spectators would be able to watch from the stands. Just to put that in perspective, that capacity would put the Hippodrome in running for the largest football stadium in the NFL if it were standing in the United States today. What could justify this kind of extravagance? Writing about Rome in the 5th century, author Edward Gibbon observed that the local populace considered the Hippodrome, quote, as their home, their temple, and the seat of the Republic, end quote. This structure wasn't just for sports. It was meant to win the awe and the loyalty of the people. Imagine approaching a giant building that, as you got closer to it, dominated everything that you could see for half a kilometer. You would walk through large marble gates that led into the seats. The lower stands were all stone, and the high stands were benches made of wood. Fans would jostle and call out to each other and even up to the owner's box where the emperor and other nobles were sitting. The energy would almost be overwhelming. And then you would see him yourself, the emperor, already in his throne in the box. Like I mentioned, people would be calling out to him, and if you were lucky, it would be a day when he would call back and discuss important political and social issues of the day right there in the stadium-like hippodrome. There would be rich tapestries hanging and colorful flags flapping from the highest points in the building and covering any bare stone that you could see. At the bottom of the stands, just above the sand, you would see the bronze statues of gods and heroes and famous horse teams that had won bygone races. The horses' images watched silently over a new generation of chariot teams, just like the jerseys bearing the retired numbers of hockey players in any local hockey rink today. In the center of the track, separating the going direction from the coming direction, were the most prestigious monuments. Closest to you was a towering Egyptian obelisk. Although it is huge, it's actually only the top third of an obelisk that was taken from Luxor, originally carved and erected in 1490 BC. It had been sliced off and brought to the emperor's new favorite city. Next to it was a thing called the Serpent Column, which was a tall statue of three intertwined snakes. It is said that it was taken from the temple of Apollo, but the original metal came from the shields of a defeated Persian army back from the 5th century BC. Finally, the sun would catch and shine off of the panels of what was called back then the Walled Obelisk. This was of a more recent vintage. It was a large monument made of stone by Roman masons and covered with metallic panels to reflect the rays of the sun. Finally, sitting amongst tens of thousands of other fans, with the emperor looking on and some of his nobles up in the box with him, you would see the chariot teams roll up to the starting line. There would often be more than 20 races in any given day. Each race would start and end at the same line. Teams would rush up to the opposite end of the track from where they started, turn around the monuments in the center, and then race back to the other side. In each race, there would be 8 chariots, and each chariot team was made up of 4 horses. This was a time before animal rights or workmen's compensation. It was inevitable on race day that there would be crashes, injuries, and pileups. The turn at the halfway point of the race was especially dangerous. Both horses and charioteers were known to lose their lives in the middle of the spectacle. It might even surprise you to know that chariot racing is actually a team sport. Originally in Constantinople, there were 4 clubs, the greens, the blues, the reds, and the whites. Over time, however, just the greens and the blues emerged as favorite teams and began to overshadow the other two, splitting the whole city between those two clubs. The loyalty and the culture of each club can be compared to the Champions League in European football today. Fans were very loyal, and rivalry occasionally spilled into violence after the races. Such was the culture and the place of the Hippodrome. And so the story of one of history's most bloody riots begins. There are many stories to tell about the Hippodrome, but the one that stands out from all the rest began sometime after some chariot race hooligans were convicted of murder in early 532 AD. It wasn't uncommon for blue and green fans to square off after races, especially considering each club also represented different political factions and even religious leanings. It wasn't always under the churning wheels of chariots and horses' hooves that people died in the Hippodrome. 8 men had been convicted of murder. Both greens and blues objected to their execution, but the government, headed by the emperor, was adamant. Then, on the day of the execution, as the convicts dropped one by one on the gallows, something unforeseen happened. The ropes tied around the necks of the final 2 men snapped and they fell to the ground alive. It's said that the executioner didn't even notice his mistake at first. Among the first to act were some monks standing nearby. They rushed to the aid of the fallen men and then hurried them through the crowd to a nearby boat and made their way across the Golden Horn. There, they reached a church and they took refuge inside. The crowd surrounded the church defensively, and the emperor's men stationed themselves outside. Surely, they would have to come out eventually, the soldiers thought. Meanwhile, those calling for their pardon expected that this change of fortune might sway the authorities to leniency. But instead of going back on his word, Justinian, the emperor at the time, decided to hold special races to try and placate the crowd. He would even benevolently commute the sentence until after the race day, which was set for January 13th. But that wasn't enough for the crowd. The atmosphere on that day was tense as fans filled the Hippodrome. It wasn't a festival. It wasn't a celebration. There was something different about this day of races. As was already mentioned, before and between the races, it was normal for commoners to voice complaints and ideas to the nobles who had gathered to watch as well. But that day, there was only one topic. It was the 2 men awaiting execution. The teams did not want these men executed, nor did the fans, but the emperor did. By the 22nd race of the day, things were turning ugly. All day, people have been shouting, "Long live the merciful blues and greens! Long live the merciful blues and greens!" And then a new chant arose from the people. "Nika, Nika, Nika, they cried. In Greek, the word Nika can mean victory or it can mean conquer. It was a rallying cry. It was common in the Hippodrome, actually. It was used to taunt fans and racers. But this time, it wasn't the Greens versus the Blues who were chanting. This time, Nika had been turned against the Emperor himself. The fans of both teams had become a mob, and their united enemy was Justinian and his government. Quickly growing concerned about the situation, the royal family and the key nobles made a hasty escape through their private entrance before all hell broke loose. Seeing that the emperor had fled, the mob was stirred into a frenzy and began battering the gate of the palace after they left the hippodrome. Eventually, somebody would light it on fire. That was the first of the fires that would continue to rage for the next 5 days while the rioters kept firemen from putting them out. The rage of the riot and the flames of the fire would feed one another and gut the entire city. The Hagia Sophia itself was totally burnt to the ground, as were many homes and many other buildings. Businesses were looted, people were dragged into the street and beaten and killed. Day after frantic day, the crowd waxed and waned, but the riots didn't lose their momentum. They never came to an end. After a short time, the crowd even began to call for a new emperor. It was turning into a coup. Some ambitious and disloyal nobles began to see an opportunity. How or when they began to pull the strings of the mob is unclear, but it's certain that they directed the fury of the people towards the emperor. While the palace remained under siege, some of the rioters pulled an aging noble named Hypatius out of his bedroom. He was literally found hiding under his bed when they got there. Hypatius was related to the former emperor and, as such, was a suitable option to take the purple and become emperor. He was an alternative. But he himself had no desire to ascend to the throne. However, the crowd left him no choice. Finally, on the fifth day, the senators behind the mob decided that it was time to crown their new emperor. They had gained enough control over the city and have fomented enough chaos. Back in the palace, meanwhile, Justinian and his closest allies were strongly considering running from the city. They had the resources to go and live in exile, and to leave the revolt, and to let the city burn behind them. It was the moment of truth. It was one of those decisions that history swings on. And that's when Theodora, Justin's low-born but strong-hearted wife, spoke up. Determination burned in her eyes as she called for silence in the council chambers. What she said that day must have made a deep impact on those gathered there, because history records her words exactly. Quote, "Whether or not a woman should give advice about courage to men is not for me to say, but in a moment of desperate danger, one must do what one can. Those who have worn the crown should never survive its loss. Never will I live to see the day when I am not saluted as empress," end quote. Although an escape route across the sea lay open for the emperor, Theodora insisted that she would stay in the city even if he left, quoting an ancient saying, quote, "The royal purple would make a fine burial shroud." Theodora was the catalyst that Justinian needed to find his own courage. The nobles who he had begun to suspect days before were now openly siding with the rioters and preparing for the new coronation. His adversaries were visible, and they had moved into the hippodrome and set it up as a basilica or headquarters. What would keep the disloyal senators and the rioters from taking his head along with his crown? He held a quick council with his closest inner circle. A simple plan was hatched. Justinian himself was a well-known supporter of the Blues. He backed them, and generally, up until now, they had backed him in return. He considered that their loyalty might be the easiest to buy back because the proposed emperor, Hypatius, was a Greens supporter. The loyal nobles, along with Theodora and Justinian, filled a pouch with gold coins from the royal treasury and entrusted it to a well-loved, well-known eunuch of the court. The eunuch walked straight into the hippodrome. Now, this was no small thing because Other emissaries and authorities had been murdered there by the sword and spear and club and torch-wielding mob. But he was able to make his way inward to the blues section unmolested. Seeking out the leaders of the blues, he gently reminded them of their emperor's support and pressed gold coins into their palms. "What will it be like for you under a green emperor, I wonder?" he pointedly asked. At the same time, Justinian secretly called two trusted military commanders and had them prepare their troops. The word of Justinian's plea and the bribe of the eunuch spread, and the crowd waited as the ceremony to crown the new emperor began. Justinian and his supporting nobles must have been waiting with bated breath as the news was delayed. Was their final maneuver successful? Then, as the procession moved up the sand of the much-loved racetrack, the blues stood up and walked out in protest. The nobles who had started the riots, or at least fueled them, and the green mob were astounded. Half of their support melted before their eyes, and some of the remaining mob, seeing the writing on the wall, decided to escape as well. Finally, after 5 days of destruction, the Nika revolt, the riots, they were over. Moments later, soldiers led by the two commanders filled up the gates and blocked off all the exits to the hippodrome and stormed inward. The rioters had gathered in one place, and they were no match for veterans from the frontier conquests of the 6th century Roman legions. As the last smoldering ruin was put out and birds encircled over the dead of the hippodrome, authorities recorded an astounding body count of over 30,000 people killed. A large portion of that number met their end where the whole situation began, in the stands of the hippodrome. Justinian held on to his crown, and he rebuilt the city, and a lot of the greatest Byzantine monuments that we have today were commissioned by him. Races in the hippodrome continued, but the centuries wore on, and after many hundred years, after the Byzantine Empire had collapsed, the hippodrome itself had fallen into ruin, and it was soon to be forgotten. The Ottomans who conquered the city weren't big horse racers, so they had little motivation to restore it. Some of the stones from the hippodrome itself were pillaged for building material, and it was also rocked over the centuries by many earthquakes. Today, only a faint outline of the track and the obelisks which stood in the center are visible above ground. Interestingly, the area has never been excavated because of other Ottoman buildings that have been erected over top. The empty space where the great hippodrome of Constantinople once stood is now a silent reminder to the unstoppable march of time and to the mysteries that lay under the streets of Istanbul. Caravan is written, produced, and recorded by me, Sean Stevenson Douglas. Music was written and performed by our good friend Tarık Yılmaz. If you want to hear more about life and adventures in Turkey, find us on Facebook and Twitter, or visit www.artofwayfaring.com. You'll find fresh content posted weekly on our website.